Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Bloomington Pantagram for Friday, February 14th, 2009. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Our forecast for today is sunny and frigid, with a high of 16 and a low of 9. We begin our reading with an article right here on the front page entitled, Love in Bloom, Flower Shop Buzz with Happy Chaos for the Holiday. By Sierra Henry, Bloomington. For florists like Gay Beck, preparation for the biggest day of the year started in December. That's when Beck, owner of Beck's Family Florist in downtown Bloomington, started pre-booking flowers for Valentine's Day. For florists, it's the biggest holiday, followed by Mother's Day. But for all the preparation by floral shops, flowers, vases, wrapping paper, staffing, some customers wait until the last minute. There's always somebody, and it doesn't matter what holiday it is, there's always somebody who waits until 4 o'clock the day of, she said, adding that people on the phone can't see her empty flower cooler, which makes it difficult to explain why she has to turn down orders. On Thursday, Beck's Family Florist was abuzz with excitement as Beck, her son Timothy, a floral designer, volunteer Laurel Davis, cut out, arranged, and packaged deliveries in anticipation of Friday. Several vases filled with roses and other flowers were piled on a table behind delivery driver Ann Lemple, who waited on another driver to fill a truck with pre-orders. It's chaos. It's happy. Chaos, Lumkill said, as the other three moved about the shop, occasionally taking phone calls, requesting last-minute orders, or frantic customers changing the location of the delivery. It's a wonderful job because it's a happy job. Everybody loves to see you come all year round. Some customers decide to spread out the holiday during the week and are smart enough that they realize they can celebrate Valentine's Day a day or two ahead of time, Lemkill said. Preparations can begin as early as September, Beck said. Florists begin taking stock of what type of containers, vases, and other seasonal items can be purchased ahead of the holiday. Ordering the flowers depends on weather conditions and anticipating the number of orders. Fortunately, florists know what flowers are popular to order for Valentine's Day. Casey Lartz, owner of Casey's Garden Shop and florist on North Main Street in Bloomington, said a dozen roses is still the most popular order, but the shop receives plenty of other orders for spring bouquets and even some tropical flowers. With that in mind, the design staff works on creating fun arrangements with festive names. The shop tries to have something for everyone, whether the customer is shopping for a sweetheart, a parent, sibling, child, or grandparent. This year, floral manager Julie Johnson and Lart's design team crafted assortments with names such as Cupid's Arrow, Crazy Love, Pink Passion, and more. The team often takes inspiration from popular songs. Once the special arrangements are in its place, Lart said his favorite part of the holiday is when customers, especially men, pop into the shop last minute or a few days prior to the holiday. I love to see the interaction between the floral designer and the gentlemen that come in, he said. The people that come through the door, we have a lot of fun with. Everybody is in a good mood when they come here. It's just an exciting time for us. This is a time when our parking lot is jammed. It's an essential holiday for a small business like ours. Florists and their teams work long hours to put together floral arrangements, but the preparations can't stop there. Many create GPS routes for their drivers to ensure efficient and timely delivery and keep a close eye on the weather. If the temperature is below 38 degrees, flowers need extra paper wrapping to keep them from withering. Bloomington Normal received between 4 and 6 inches of snow on Wednesday, causing school delays or cancellations, which affected flower deliveries set for Thursday and Friday. On Thursday morning, Beck was frantically adjusting delivery routes for many orders that were set up to go to several schools. South of Bloomington, the snow wasn't such a factor. At the flower corner in Clinton, Retail manager Lou Dunlap said the flower shop was busting as employees finished putting orders together. "I never realized how busy it was," she said. "There's a lot. You know, you have to get all the Valentine stuff to make all the arrangements and stuff." On Friday, florists will send their trucks out for deliveries to complete another successful Valentine's Day. Come Monday, though, Beck said her shop will do post-holiday cleanup before preparing for the next holiday. And in election 2020 news from the front page of the Pantograph, Blumenshine Brady debate term limits, taxes at ISU. Lenore Sabota. Normal. State Rep. Dan Brady, Republican of Bloomington, and his Republican primary challenger, David Paul Blumenshine, fielded a dozen questions ranging from ethics and budget issues to term limits and taxes during a debate Thursday night at the Illinois State University Alumni Center. Blumenshine, who ran unsuccessfully against Brady in the 2018 primary, said term limits and a freeze on taxes are needed to turn the state around. Brady said term limits take decisions out of the hands of voters and defended an increase in the gas tax to finance a state construction bill, noting it hadn't been raised since 1990. Brady said the gas tax revenue is in a lockbox and can only be used for capital projects. But Blumenshine said, "If you believe there's a lockbox in Springfield, wow." About 100 people attended the 105th House District debate sponsored by the McLean County League of Women Voters and WGLT-FM Radio, which broadcast the debate. The winner of the March 17th Republican primary will face Democrat Chamberlain Cummings in the November general election. Blumenshine said, "Illinois has not had a balanced budget since 2001, Representative Brady's first year in office." Brady noted his first year in office was the last time we had a Republican majority in the Senate. Regarding the state's budget deficit, Blumenshine said it's a spending issue, not a revenue issue. "Revenue increased last year, yet it didn't do a thing," said Blumenshine. "What needs to happen is we need to cut taxes, we need to freeze them, we need to cut spending." Brady said the budget that was most recently passed was a reasonable compromise that put Illinois on a path to fiscal responsibility, invests in infrastructure, and creates jobs. On pension reform, Brady said one of the challenges is passing legislation that will withstand a constitutional challenge in the state Supreme Court. He said a bill proposed by House Republican leader Jim Durkin, which Brady supports, holds great potential. Blumenshine said lawmakers in Springfield continue to dance around pension reform and noted of Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker, not once did he mention the pension crisis in his State of the State address. In answer to a question on what to do to reduce gun violence, both candidates say they support the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which protects the right to bear arms. Blumenshine said, "I believe we should encourage legal gun ownership." Brady said there are many layers of background checks already, and existing laws should be enforced before passing new ones. Regarding declines in Illinois' population, Brady said one way to reverse the out-migration is to pass laws to make the state more attractive to business, both those already here and those thinking of moving to Illinois so they can create more jobs. Blumenshine said the problem is we are being taxed to death and Republicans voted for a budget that was laced with corruption. Neither candidate directly responded to a question referring to climate change that asked what Illinois should do to reduce carbon emissions. Blumenshine said, "There's so much conflicting information out there, and the country is hitting on all cylinders because of fossil fuels." Brady said action is needed to protect consumers and stabilize rates, and energy companies shouldn't be the ones writing energy bills. Asked what each would do to ensure evidence-based funding for K-12 schools is fulfilled, Brady said the budget that was passed puts $375 million into the evidence-based funding formula, and that's a major start that helps level the playing field among districts in different parts of the state. Blumenschein said he supports school funding and getting more money into the classroom, but unfortunately, that's not where the dollars are going, and instead, too much is going to administration and bureaucracy. In response to a question of what each would do to support ISU, Blumenschein said, "This is my alma mater." But, he added, "We need to go back to some of the alums for some of these projects, such as the Fine Arts Center and the Bone Student Center renovations." Brady said he worked with the majority party to help students reduce debt by increasing funding for the Monetary Award Program grants. "I helped ISU by brokering $40 million for deferred maintenance." And also on the front page, Twin City Living, Affordable Housing Units on the Way, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. As the finishing touches are made to the Washington Senior Apartments near downtown Bloomington, another developer plans to break ground next month on the Lincoln Lofts in East Bloomington. When both are completed, the separate, privately developed projects will add more than 100 affordable units for seniors and other low-income residents. "Every additional unit of affordable housing is a benefit," said Jeremy Hayes, executive director of the Bloomington Housing Authority, which manages the federally funded public housing project in the city. "A few projects can add more affordable units can make a difference in a community of our size," he said. "So these are both very positive additions to the community." Lincoln Lofts. Ohio-based MVAH partners Lincoln Lofts will have 56 apartments for income-eligible families in a four-story building, 2220 East Lincoln Street, near the Four Seasons Health Clubs. Lincoln Lofts is being developed at an approximate cost of $18 million. It will have 8 one-bedroom, 20 two-bedroom, and 28 three-bedroom apartments. "We are still in the pre-construction. We intend to break ground in March of this year," Hume Ann, MVAH Senior Vice President of Development, said Wednesday. The company did not provide an anticipated completion date. "The pre-construction phase for a project like this just involves a lot of different documents and a lot of review," added Hayes. In December, the Bloomington City Council approved the final plat of the MVAH Partners subdivision, and city planning staff are reviewing a site plan submitted January 21st. BHA is providing federal project-based voucher to subsidize rent for 17 of the Lincoln Lofts apartments to ensure a percentage of the units are affordable to the lowest income tier, said Hayes. "I think a broader message about the development is that there are going to be varying level of incomes, varying level of affordability, and it can serve different populations." The Washington Senior Apartments in the former Bloomington High School building at 510 East Washington Street is set to open at the end of April, Iceberg Development Group owner James N. Bergman said Wednesday. Since purchasing the 103-year-old building in 2016 for $400,000, Iceberg of LeClaire, Iowa, has been converting the second, third, and fourth floors into 59 apartments for people 55 and older. The company will lease space to commercial and nonprofit users on the first floor. Pioneer Property Management Incorporated of Plateville, Wisconsin, has been hired to oversee the rental units. "We've had advertisements running for a couple of months, and then the management company said they have about 40 people on a list to date, so it seems to be going very well in terms of potential tenants," Bergman said. "You find out when you start going through the applications that you're not going to capture 100% of the applicants," he added. "My guess is half of the apartments will be filled with current applicants. Generally speaking, what happens when we open a building and show them the product, then we get a lot more activity. But it is unusual to get this kind of activity before anyone has seen the units, so we're pretty happy," Bergman said. The Washington Senior Apartments are a combination of two studio, 22 two-bedroom, and 35 one-bedroom units. Monthly rent starts at $625 for a one-bedroom unit and $700 for a two-bedroom unit. Bergman said he is happy with how the project turned out. We did run into issues with the building behind the walls that we didn't expect, but nothing crazy. So it's going pretty much according to plan, he said. I think people will be surprised with how nice the units are. They're nice spaces, tall ceilings, big wide hallways. The Illinois Housing Development Authority awarded tax credits that will be used to offset the developers' construction costs for both projects. Iceberg will also use the receipt of federal tax credits for the historical buildings. The savings in underwriting are passed on to the renter in the form of below-market rents. As affordable housing communities, residents must meet income guidelines based on the average median income for the area, which for fiscal 2019 was $88,300. Effective April 24, 2019, the annual income cannot exceed $37,140 for a one-person household, $42,420 for a two-person household, and $52,980 for a four-person household. Because these income limits change on a yearly basis, prospective tenants should check with apartment managers to see if they qualify. Now we turn to the local and state section and find an article entitled "Veterans Find New Mission on Ice" by Steve Barlow. Bloomington. Patrick Schmidt understands the importance of a good teammate. A senior airman with the U.S. Air Force from 2000 to 2004, Schmidt learned about counting on others. Schmidt is still looking for the good of the common goal, but now it's in the form of a hockey net in an arena, and his teammates are fellow veterans from nearly every branch of the service. On Saturday, Schmidt, treasurer for the Central Illinois Veteran Warriors hockey team, and his teammates will play the Chicago Blackhawks Wounded Warriors at Grossinger Motors Arena at 1:30 p.m. The two teams are the state's only veteran warrior teams. For Schmidt, the games combine his greatest passions. I did play before serving, and after leaving the service, I played for the Illinois State hockey team, he said. I just enjoyed playing when I was younger and was hooked by the sport. He was an aircraft mechanic in the Air Force, and his hearing was affected by the time he spent around jet engines. As a result, he has a service disability. For me, this team is about the camaraderie, he said. It gives us a chance to get together and do something we enjoy. Todd Smith of Bloomington enlisted in the Army, but tore a tendon in boot camp. He served 16 months before being discharged due to the injury. Being a member of this team is a way for me to feel like I can continue my military enlistment as a civilian, he said. The camaraderie we feel as a team and the discipline we are instilling as an organization makes all of us feel right at home. Being a member of this team gives me the opportunity to give back to other veterans who may suffer from PTSD and other life issues. I'm able to provide counsel and friendship to those veterans who may need some extra support. The mental health aspect is a big factor, added Schmidt. The one statistic I can't but think of is that every day 22 veterans take their own lives. I feel strongly that an activity like this helps with symptoms of depression and the issues that can follow veterans. The goal of the team is to provide a structured event where team members can join forces no matter skill level. The program, based in Normal, was founded about 2 years ago. It's grown from 5 players to more than 30, he said. Saturday's game is raising money to sponsor out-of-state trips, including travel costs, meals, and lodging. Also in state and local, BPD citation policy eyed. Panel seeks better notification rules for voiding tickets. By Maria Nagel. Bloomington. The Bloomington Public Safety and Community Relations Board has recommended the Bloomington Police Department strengthen its notification policy when citations are voided. The board voted unanimously Wednesday to make the recommendation after reviewing its January meeting and appeal of a complaint received by the board on December 18th. Its second complaint about a police action in the panel's 2 years' existence. The complaint involved how a citation alleging driving under the influence was issued, canceled, and later reissued. This is something we want to evaluate, Police Chief Dan Doneth said Thursday. Obviously, the PSCRB is a representation of the community, and we appreciate their feedback and suggestions the way we operate. We will take a look at that recommendation and see how it fits. The panel of private citizens was created by the City Council in July 2017 to advise the police chief and city manager on police-related issues and complaints. The board also affirmed how the officer handled the situation, saying he followed department protocol and procedures. We felt that the department's investigation and protocol was followed, said PSCRB Chairman Art Taylor. What we did find is there was no written policy in place to deal with the citation that had been voided. The complaint itself occurred in March 2016, so it's a very old complaint, said Taylor, adding that he did not know why the complainant filed an appeal after nearly 4 years. The complaining person was issued a driving under the influence of drug citation related to an automobile accident. The police officer who responded to the accident suspected that the drugs and alcohols may have been involved and issued a citation. But after the driver was transported to Advocate Broman Medical Center and later transferred to a Peoria hospital, the officer realized that he had issued the citation in error because he needed a blood sample, so he voided the citation, said Taylor. The complainant never got the voided citation. When the results from toxicology taken on samples taken from the driver at the time of the crash came back about a month later, the complainant was issued a second DUI citation, to which he pleaded guilty, said Taylor. Taylor said he could not provide the names of the officer and the complainant because their names are redacted in the appeal submitted to the PSCRB to ensure confidentiality and impartiality. The complaint was among 11 about officer conduct filed in 2019. That number was down from 20 filed in 2018, 15 in 2017, and 17 in 2016. All complaints about Bloomington Police must be filed with the police department, which then investigates them. The 7-member PSCRB, which has been meeting monthly since December 2017, reviews any cases appealed by the people dissatisfied with the BPD's determination. But the board plays an advisory role only. In looking at an appeal complaint, the board is empowered only to review whether the police department's protocols were followed properly in the department's own investigation of the complaint. They are free to make recommendations on policy changes, but have no authority over the department. In other state news, we have teacher slammed over students' anthem protest. Chicago. Chicago Public Schools says it has launched an investigation after 4 students complained that a teacher told a Hispanic student she should go back to her own country because she didn't stand during the national anthem. The students at Senn High School on the city's north side said they heard the teacher make the comments to the girl, who is a U.S. citizen, during Hispanic Heritage Assembly January 30th. If the allegations are true, the teacher's comments would be a violation of the district's anti-discrimination policy. CPS is committed to fostering learning environments that embrace and support all students, and the alleged actions of the teacher in question run counter to our beliefs and priorities, district spokesman James Garrity said. Jessica Salazar said she and the other students stayed seated during the anthem to protest police brutality, U.S. immigration policies, and anti-immigrant political rhetoric. She said the teacher asked her if her legs were broken and then said she should go back to my own country if I didn't want to stand, Salazar said. I felt very offended because my parents have fought hard to be part of this country, the 17-year-old Salazar told the Chicago Sun-Times. The 4 students held a sit-in at the school on Wednesday to protest what they called the school's slow response to the complaint, as well as to urge the teacher's removal from the school. I felt like we were getting the runaround, Salazar said. A authorities have not released the teacher's name, and the CPS has not said if any actions was taken against him. Shakira Chacon, an 18-year-old U.S. citizen who moved to the United States from Costa Rica less than 3 years ago, said she was also offended by the teacher's words. "When I heard that, that's when I jumped in and said, 'You don't say that to a student. It is disrespectful.'" Now let's take a look at today's Flick Fact. The question: do you know what occurred 106 years ago today, on February 14, 1914, that has not occurred in Bloomington Normal since? The answer: on that Valentine's Day, it snowed 13 inches in Bloomington Normal. According to National Weather Service records, that is the most it has ever snowed in a single calendar day here in Bloomington. And how time flies. 100 years ago, February 14, 1920. Trains are heavier now, so C&A track gangs are laying 90 to 100 pound rail on the Bloomington to Chicago line. The used rails are still good but a little worn, so the men are sawing off the ends and relaying the rails on the Dwight Streeter line, replacing tracks laid in 1875. 75 years ago, February 14, 1945, Sergeant Elmer Phillips has died in a German prison camp. He had been wounded about a month ago before his capture. Also, Lieutenant William E. Genders has been reported killed in action over Belgium. Both men were from Bloomington. 50 years ago, February 14, 1970. Richard Green said he was asked to resign his city service department job. He is the son of former service director Harley Green, who was forced to retire at age 70. Young Green was let go by his father's successor. The son's vacant job has already been filled. 25 years ago, February 14, 1995. About 25 Saverbrook residents showed up at the village board meeting to show support for Police Chief Madeline Nickham. She was recently beat up and left in a ditch. She has gotten rid of hot rodders and drag racers, they said, and done a good job for Saverbrook. We'll wrap up this half hour with HUD Funds Central Illinois Housing, by Kennedy Nolan. Bloomington, Decatur, and Coles County Housing Authorities are among the Central Illinois agencies receiving portions of the $21 million in federal funding for the development, financing, and modernization of public housing properties, U.S. Senators Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin announced on Thursday. Bloomington Housing Authority will receive $1,401,725. Decatur Housing Authority will receive $1,474,747, and Coles County Housing Authority will receive $408,246. Funding is allocated through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's Public Housing and Capital Fund. Children and family in need across Central Illinois rely on investments like these that help improve housing conditions and reduce homelessness, Duckworth said. Along with Senator Durbin, I am proud to advocate for federal funding to support programs that foster safe communities and help ensure all Illinoisans have access to the affordable housing they need to get ahead. This federal funding gives local agencies in Central Illinois the ability to offer safe and affordable housing to those who need it most. In addition, the local economy stands to benefit from this investment in infrastructure projects that will bring safety and modernization to the area's public housing, Durbin said. I will continue to fight alongside Senator Duckworth to support safe and affordable housing options for Illinoisans. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph. Please stay tuned.